ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
ॐ दट् ब्रह्मन् इज़् इन्फिनिट् and this universe is also infinite. The infinite proceeds from the infinite. Taking the infinitude of the infinite universe, it remains as the infinite Brahman alone. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all.
We have completed the 10th mantra in the 4th section of the 1st chapter of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And this is one of the, I would say, the very essence of the entire Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, of all Upanishads, of all the scriptures in this world. And the rest is elaboration. As I mentioned earlier, the first chapter called Madhukanda, it is also called Upadesha Kanda. Madhukanda means, Madhu means honey, because God is like honey to all of us. Honey means the dearest, the nearest, the closest. And we are not really separate from Him. That is expressed in this beautiful Mahavakya, which occurs in this 10th mantra of the 4th section, Aham Brahmasmi. So through these mantras, Upanishad wants us to understand three primary truths. First, universal unity, samashti bhavana. Everybody in this world, everything in this world, living, non-living, all social roles, professions, and deities are but different expressions of the same Brahman, just as we are the only one. In our dreams, even though it appears to be uncountable number of objects in our dream, they're all nothing but me, the one I, as it were, getting reflected, like one sun getting reflected in a million billion mirrors. So, sarvam kalvidam brahma, in other words. And following this truth, the second truth is, nothing is truly separate. What's our condition now? We are under the spell of the avidya, ignorance. What is ignorance? First, to think that I am not Brahman. Second, to think everything in this world is separate from everything in this world. My hands are separate from my legs. My fingers are separate from my hand. Not to speak of another person, another living creature, another non-living object. So, nothing is truly separate. I am everything. So, we were discussing the social systems called caste systems. It is nothing but a division for the welfare of the world. But its inner truth is oneness. Just to illustrate. I love to illustrate. Until I am satisfied that the point I want to make is clear, as far as I can do that. See, eyes are most important in a human body, in any body actually. Whether it is a owl, whether it is a tiger, whether it is a deer, eyes give us the closest knowledge of things. Then comes the ears. Hearing, then comes the smell, etc. So, everything has got its division. There are four castes are there, wherever you go. How many castes are there in this world? Not one, not three, but four, exactly. The thinkers, the law upholders, and the people, so-called business people, who move things from where they are available in plenty to where they are needed. So from one place to another place, things are brought. That is the third division called Vaishyas. And then of course, workers are needed. And as I mentioned yesterday, these divisions are divided according to the dominance of a particular quality. Please note that all the three gunas work simultaneously, but which dominates most of the time and which dominate for a particular type of action to be performed efficiently, that makes it whether a person is a Brahmana or a Kshatriya or a Vaishya or a Shudra. Philosophers, warriors, business people or merchants and workers. The same person can be all the four at different times. When I am thinking, I am a Brahmana. When I am enforcing something, upholding something, I am a Kshatriya. When I am trying to buy something or to sell something or to supply something, I am a businessman or merchant, Vaishya. And when I am doing physical activity, all the four have to be done by all the four castes. Nobody can simply sit and say, I will only think, I will not eat food, I will not move, etc. But one particular faculty is more dominant throughout the day, throughout life. So if a person is more thinking type, he does activity in the form of upholding, in the form of supplying, in the form of working, but the dominant part is sattva guna, which is thinking. So we can apply the same thing to different castes. But nothing is truly separate because whole life is nothing but evolution. So the idea is from the lowest guna, from the lowest of the lowest guna, because there are several degrees, almost infinite degrees of each guna, to move up higher through experience, through understanding, that is called evolution, until we realize our true nature, until we know everything is nothing but Brahman. Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Therefore, nothing is truly separate. And as we progress, this separation becomes less and less until we understand I am everything, everything is me. So the social division cannot be removed. It is for the welfare of the world, but its inner truth is oneness. This is the second truth. Third, the supremacy of dharma. So that is why satyam vada dharmam chara. And we have also seen dharma is also called satyam. Satyam is also called dharma. True right understanding is a satyam. And expressing our understanding through physical activity is called dharma. And this dharma is popularly known as, that is vidhi and nishedha. Do this, do not do this. And not only in spiritual life, but in every sphere of, every field of activity. Health field, for example, eat this, do not eat. Do this exercise, do not do that exercise. So, do speak this one, do not speak something else. Do read this one, do not read something else. Do think this way, do not think that way. So, what is the point here? Supremacy of dharma. This is the point. Dharma is higher than authority. So what does dharma do? It rules all the four castes. And everybody has got his own dharma. The Shudra, the worker has his own dharma, his own adharma. The merchant has his own dharma, his own adharma. The warrior or the kings or the rulers, the presidents, the prime ministers have their own dharma and adharma. And the Brahmins have their own dharma and adharma. That is the second truth. Third truth, Upanishad wants to convey that it is not that you are incomplete and you do something and you are going to become complete. No, you are already complete. But we feel incomplete because of misunderstanding called avidya. But by understanding that life is meant to manifest our potential divinity, and there are definite pathways called karma yoga, bhakti yoga, raja yoga, jnana yoga, we can manifest. So in a sense, these mantras want to lead me, you, everybody from the vyasti, individual, to the samasti, from external activity, broadly called as rituals, to inner act rituals called upasana, ultimately to atmajnanam. So rituals, then contemplation or upasana, and jnanam or self-knowledge. These are the three steps. In this background, let us briefly discuss the mantras from 11 to 17. I am not going to read the Sanskrit mantras. Anyway, you can read them separately. But I will read the translation and where necessary, briefly comment. In the beginning, so there was only Brahman. Brahmava idam agre asit ekameva. Brahman alone was there in the beginning. And that Brahman wanted to manifest himself, grossify himself. So that is called creation. And creation started. First he created, just I am reminding you the background, which we already discussed. He created this entire universe, living, non-living. That is called Srishti. Having created, then it has to be run properly. For that purpose, Brahman has manifested himself as Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara. Brahma's role is to create. That's it. His duty is over. But Vishnu has to do palana. Sthiti means he has to sustain, he has to uphold the dharma. For that purpose, Brahman first created four castes, as we elaborately discussed. First, Deva Brahmana, among the gods. Agni was the Brahmana. Then, other Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, they have come. That is what, for the next several mantras, that is the essence of how the sthiti is being now put into action. And then exactly as Brahman became the Deva Brahmana, etc., similarly from the Deva Brahmana, he became Manushya Brahmana. From the Deva Kshatriya, he became the Manushya Kshatriya. From the Deva Vaishya, he became the Manushya Vaishya or human Vaishya, human merchant. And from the Deva Shudra, he became Manushya Shudra. That is what he wanted. So, he, means Brahman, being one, did not flourish. Because the Srishti is done, but it has to be maintained. So, what did he do? He projected further an excellent form, Kshatriyahood. First, he created Kshatriyas among the gods. Indra, Varuna, Soma, Rudra, Parjanya, Yama, Mrityu, and Ishana. These are the Deva Kshatriyas. Therefore, there is no one higher than the Kshatriyas. Thus at the Rajasuya sacrifice, the Brahmin sits below and worships the Kshatriya. And a beautiful definition is given. Why does the Brahmin sit? We have to presume, how does this king really perform the Rajasuya sacrifice? How does he know? There is a sacrifice called Rajasuya. We have to presume that the Brahmana had already taught him that such a one is there. If you perform that one properly, then you will get wonderful results. You will be able to enjoy your life. And then the king starts performing. Now the description we have to understand, that now Kshatriya, the warrior, is performing this ritual called this Yajna, Rajasuya Yajna. But since he is performing, he will be sitting higher. And then the priests, brahmanas, ritviks, for the priests who have to perform, they sit below. And does it mean that the brahmana is inferior to the kshatriya? No. But he wants to say, brahmana supports all the time, just like a baby being taken up on the shoulders of the father, and without father taking up, the baby will fall down, cannot move. This way the king cannot perform anything in this life unless he is supported from above through knowledge, from below helping the king perform his proper duties. Then he confers that glory on Kshatriya Hudilo. A Brahman confers. But nevertheless, that Brahman, the Brahmana, is the source, the support of the Kshatriya. Therefore, even though the king is exalted at the sacrifice, at the end of it, he resorts to Brahminhood as his source. He bows down, by your grace, I have been able to complete it, so etc. So the Upanishad wants to tell, respect the Brahmin. We are not talking about birth Brahmins. We are talking about Guna Brahmins. By qualities, in whom Sattva Guna. And as I quoted yesterday, only a person who is godly, who has become God through behavior, he is really Brahmana. Brahma Janati iti Brahmanaha. So, one should always respect Brahmins, not the caste Brahmins, not the birth Brahmins, but those who are superior in knowledge and conduct. And whoever slights a Brahmana, that we can also translate it as, whoever slights one's own Guru, that I am greater than the Guru. And Sri Ramakrishna is the greatest example how he used to respect his several gurus, whether it was Bhairavi Brahmani or Totapuri or the Sufi Guru Govinda or the he who initiated him into Rama Mantra, Jatadhari Sadhu. From all these people, he showed the highest respect. And what is the greatness of Sri Ramakrishna? Now the disciple knows, my realization is far higher, far superior to all these, his gurus' realizations. If you study the life of Sri Ramakrishna, you will come to know about it. And yet, he never became proud and said, I am so grateful because the Divine Mother alone brought them to me. So therefore, it is being described here, always respect the Brahmana. A Brahmana is the Jagadguru. True Brahmana is the Jagadguru, because from whom right true knowledge descends, he is a Brahmana. And the foundation for our happiness is called in Hinduism Varna Ashrama Dharma, according to our quality, according to our stage in life. If we fall into those four caste categories, it is called Varna Dharma. And if we fall into these, what is called stages of life, the student's life, the married life, the withdrawal life, and the renunciation's life. This is called ashrama dharma. Ashrama belongs to life. Varna belongs to the caste. We are not talking about caste by birth, but caste by gunas. And as I quoted yesterday, chaturvarnyam maya srishtam gunakarma vibhagashaha. So, without these caste system, society will fall into chaos. To give a simple example, that a war is going on now. So, there are people who think and create the weapons. And there are people who are trained in using them properly. There are people who have to manufacture them, supply them. And there are people who have to carry them together, put them together, screw them together, check up that they are done properly, and after testing, yes, you are ready, then the soldiers, the real kshatriyas, they will do the thing. So therefore, the caste system is marvelous. And in here we have to understand, earlier I mentioned, who is the Deva Brahmana? Agni is called Deva Brahmana. Why is Agni called, considered as a Deva Brahmana, divine Brahmin? Because the whole Rigveda starts with a particular mantra. It goes like this. Om Agnimele Purohitam Ignasya Devam Ritvijam Hotaram Ratnadhatamam. I adore Agni, the priest of the sacrifice, the divine minister of the ritual, and the Hota who bestows treasures. So, Agni Devata is considered the Brahmana among the gods. He is also called Purohitaha. Puraha means just in front of us, Agni, fire. Because in the olden days, everything used to be offered, lit a fire and sit in front, behind it, and then go on pouring all your oblations mixed with clarified butter, ghee, whether it is bilva leaves or many other materials. So that is why Brahmava idamagra asid ekameva. So Agni Devata, Agni, was the first manifestation according to this Upanishad. And yet he cannot do anything because he requires Kshatriyas, warriors, he requires Vaishyas, he requires Shudras, and that is what is said. And who are the Kshatriyas? So they were given, Deva Kshatriyas are given ruling authority even among them, but primarily for all of us. They are ruling. That's why if you remember Vedanta Sara, every limb of our human body is ruled by somebody. For example, the eyes are ruled by the Surya Devata, the sun, and the mind is ruled by Chandra, the moon. The hands are ruled by the Indra. The famous story of Sri Ramakrishna, a Brahmin killed a cow, and the sin he did not want to accept, and he said, since Indra is the presiding deity of the hand, let this go to him. You can recall that story. So here, Upanishad says, Indraha, Indra, Varuna, Soma, Rudra, Parjanya, Yamaha, Mrityuhu, Ishanaha. Indra, Varuna, Soma, Rudra, Parjanya, Yama, Mrityu, and Ishana. These are called Deva Kshatriyas. So that is what we have to understand. Similarly, Vaishyas are there. So this Upanishad is not satisfied. Kshatriyas are okay. But Kshatriyas have to be assisted by the Vaishyas. And so the next creation will be Deva Vaishyas. This is mentioned in the 12th mantra, 4th section, 12th mantra. So the Viraj, the creator, did not flourish. He projected the Vaishya caste and the classes of gods who are designated in groups. Who are these Vaishyas? Deva Vaishyas. The Vasus, Rudras, Adityas, Vishve Devas and Maruts. These are called Deva Vaishyas. But then the creator is not happy with that. So in the 13th mantra we get, so he created Shudras. Still he did not flourish. He projected the Shudra caste. Pushan. This earth is verily Pushan. The Bhudevata is the Devata indicating Shudra. Why? Because like workers working and making our life easier. What is it that we know that makes our life worth? That is called this earth, this physical earth. But Deva, from the godly point of view, it is the divine earth. That is why it is called Prithvi Devata. That Prithvi Devata manifests in our world as Prithvi. And even here, she is the earth goddess. That's why everything, our food, we come from this food and we go back. So dust unto dust. So this earth nourishes everybody, and this is how these four castes have been given. And in the 14th mantra, as we already discussed, how to keep all these four castes united, fruitful, efficient. For that, a divine rule is created. That is called what we call in the Bible, Ten Commandments. Do this, don't do this. And that's what Hinduism says, Vidhi and Nishedha. You must do this. Vidhi is not a choice. You must do. And Nishedha is, you must not do. It is a commandment. And that is called Dharma. So first you have to understand what to do, what not to do. And if we don't follow, what would be the consequences? So therefore, it is written there that Bhagavan had created this Dharma. That is why Dharma meva jayate, dharmo rakshati rakshitaha. There is a beautiful shloka which says, if somebody observes Dharma, that Dharma is going to save that person in every way. What is our problem? Because we are such short-sighted people, we only see at this moment what we experience. We don't have the power to think backwards or in the past. We don't have even less power what is going to happen in the future. That's why, since we are like blind people, you know, when horses are tied to carts, vehicles, how does the horse pull? If it is given the freedom to look everywhere, it may not obey the master. So they cover its eyes. Only a few feet in front it could see. Dharma is like that. It will guide us in the right way, covering our eyes to all that we should not do. So therefore, created Dharma. And Dharma should be put into practice. And Dharma manifests as what? Do this, do not do that. And to know what is Dharma, we have to take the help of our gurus, and it can be computer guru, or it can be what we call spiritual guru, as Swami Brahmananji tells. Even to become an expert pickpocket, we will have to have a guru. Guru is one who imparts us right knowledge of that particular subject. So that's why Dharma is called God, Dharma Devata, Yama Dharma Raja, and he is called Kshatriya. And that is why when Nachiketa went there, Nachiketa was a Brahmana, and Yama Dharma Raja, even though a knower of Brahman, was a Kshatriya, because his duty is to see which person, which jiva had done what type of dharmic activities and adharmic activities, what we call keep an account, and then accordingly distribute the karma phala. And then the mantra goes to say beautifully, yo vai sa dharmaha satyam vaitat tasmat satyam vadantam ahur dharmam vadati iti dharmam va vadantam satyam. That says that whether you call it dharma, dharma is nothing but satyam, satyam is nothing but dharmam, both of them cannot be separated, like an object cannot be separated from its name. An object is outside, and the thought about that object, the knowledge about that object is within our mind. They can't be separated. You can't think of a table if you don't have the thought of the table. And if you don't have the thought of the table, you can't recognize what is a table. So it is the Upanishad is telling, what is it that can save us under every circumstance, all the time, even when we are asleep, unconscious? Only Dharma can say, Dharma meva jayate, Satya meva jayate. So Dharma is Satya, and Satya is Dharma. Therefore, Satyam vada, speak truth. That means what you know to be the truth, speak it. And then Dharmam chara, what is proper, what is the only thing that should be done, you do that. And the whole, what is called all the four castes, all the four stages in one's life are based upon this Satya and Dharma. That's why in the 11th Anuvaka of the Taittiriya Upanishad, in the very first chapter called Shikshavalli, we have noted it is a universal convocation. That is, the whole life based upon truthfulness and dharma. You remember, a relative of Sri Ramakrishna had borrowed some money from somebody promising he would return back the money after some time, but greed overcame him. He didn't want to pay. Then the person from whom that person borrowed, he threatened, I will call Sri Ramakrishna, I will ask him to be a witness. See the faith of that man, who was not a relative of Sri Ramakrishna, that he knew Sri Ramakrishna would never utter any untruth. And Sri Ramakrishna was present when that person threatened the relative of Sri Ramakrishna, I will take you to court and I will call Sri Ramakrishna as witness. And then Sri Ramakrishna said, you better, I know you have taken money, you better give back that money to him. And if you don't, I will go against you. I will tell the truth in the court. And that fellow now had no option. So probably to have a saint as our close relative may not be sometimes very convenient. So the same rule applies not only among the gods, but among the four castes also. Satyam and Dharma are the foundation, very foundation, and that is what we have to understand. So from 15th onwards, this Virat or the creator is following exactly same mold like the four castes of the Devatas. He created the Brahmin, Kshatriya and Vaishya and Shudra. And then the mantra goes, such a beautiful this one it is doing, that how do we know what is dharma, what is satya? For that, we have to study the scripture. What is a scripture? That is God himself telling the truth about himself and about the world, which we call, this is the truth about the world and this is your duty, what you have to do in your life. Then the mantra goes on saying something very beautiful. So if somebody doesn't acquire the satyam from a right teacher, yatha vedo va ananuktaha anyadva karma akritam edeha va api en evam with mahat punyam karma karoti tadhi asya antatha kshiyate eva. So if somebody doesn't study the Veda, even though it is available, doesn't study, for example, the New Testament, doesn't study the teachings of the Sufi saints, doesn't study the imitation of Christ, because the Bible can be extremely confusing. But read the imitation of Christ. You will get what actually Bhagavan, Jesus Christ, wants to teach all of us, transform all of us. Foolish that we are, we think certain external rituals are going to help us. No, they are not going to help us. So, what the mantra here wants to convey to us, that even if you formally study the Veda, but really do not think it is true, and therefore you do not put it into practice, but you have a little bit of faith in the scripture, you may be doing some punya karma. So what happens? Tadhi asya antataha kshayate. At the end, it will become destroyed. What does it mean? This is what Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan Krishna in the Gita says, kshine punyam arthi lokam vishanti. Not that punya will not give the result, but its result will be very ephemeral, very temporary, for a very short time. And interestingly, why do I say it is short? Because whenever you eat, for example, a sweet, for a small fraction of a minute, you forget the entire world. You become one with ananda, happiness. So there is a belief that if somebody acquires a lot of merit punyam, he will go to Indra Loka, Chandra Loka, higher lokas, and he will experience happiness for a very long time. I have doubts about this statement for a very long time, because ananda means to go beyond time. And even if it is from the suffering point of view, only we count time. So even if a person, so-called, goes to higher loka and lives for, let us say, long time, how does that long time pass? Just like our wonder, if you have wonderful holiday, 1 week, 10 days, it looks as though in a minute, the whole holiday trip is over. Because it is so happiness, it gave you so much happiness. We have to understand, add that. Otherwise, if we went there, hotel refused to accommodate you, or the aeroplane was cancelled because of some reason, and your whole holiday is ruined, I am not talking about that. Everything went off very well, and 1 week passed as if it is only 1 hour had passed, if at all, not even 1 minute. So even if a 1,000 aeons will pass as if, because the more happy you are, the more you get out of the limitation of time, space and causation. So what is it we desire? What is we imagine? I want to be happy forever. When a young man wants to get married, a young woman wants to get married, what is the hope of this young man and young woman? That as long as we will live very happily. Such a thing is a mistaken notion. It is not going to happen. At best, you can say reluctant acceptance of the fact of life. So therefore, we remain unfulfilled. And what should be done? For that, the Upanishad has to tell. It is not enough to say that you do acquire punyam and you will be very happy person. No, it says you will not be a happy person. You remain unfulfilled. You feel you are very limited. You want unlimited joy. And therefore, the Upanishad, this mantra says, Atmanam eva lokam upasita. So, you must worship your true God, Brahman. In other words, God. You must realize God. And what happens? Sa yaha atmanam eva lokam upasite nahi asya karma kshayate. Very interesting word. Atma is compared to a loka, a world. It is called Atma loka. And when a person, if you go to America, you are in the country called America. If you go to France, you are in a country called France or UK. But what is this? Atmaloka means I know I am Brahman, and that experience is called Atmaloka. And one who realizes that I am not the body, mind, etc., I am the Atman. What happens? He asya karma nakshiyate. His karma, that means karma phala, that is happiness. It will never get destroyed because the nature of Atman is Sat Chit Ananda. Asmat hi eva atmano yadyat kamayate tat tat srujate. So therefore, whatever way this man wants to enjoy, and this is a redundant shloka actually, or his lines are redundant. That is to say that a knower of Brahman, he can enjoy anything he wants. What we need to understand is, once a person knows I am Brahman, I am of the nature of ananda, bliss. The question of his desiring, I am incomplete, I am not happy. If I go to Indraloka, I will be happy. If I embrace a beautiful angel, then I will be happy. No, such a desire will not work out. But to make people, ignorant people like us, understand, what do I get by realizing Brahman? The Upanishad answers, what will you not get? You will get everything. How do I get? Oh, whatever you desire, yadyat kamayate, that enjoyment will be there instantaneously. You will be able to enjoy it. It's a very wonderful psychological fact. I gave many times examples. Suppose you are dreaming that I want to, before you went to bed, your terrible desire to eat some sweet, as an example. And you went to bed, and then you find yourself, somebody has invited to his house, her house, and then the very sweets you love, has been prepared or bought, and they offered plenty of it. Eat as much as you want, and you are eating. Now, are you happy or not? You have to imagine this one. What I am going to tell you is that if you have some unfulfilled desires, and if you have got a strong power of imagination, you just imagine that mentally, close your eyes, mentally imagine, I am eating this first class sweet, and there is no time limit, there is no counting of the sweets, as many sweets as you want, as long as you want, you can enjoy, provided you have that imagination. Is this a valid proposition or just meaningless statement? Just imagine, where was Gopala's mother when she was absorbed in her Gopala? Sri Ramakrishna says, her mind is now in the presence of Goloka, in the presence of Bhagavan Krishna. And she came and came to this consciousness. She confirmed, I was enjoying everything in the presence of my darling child, Krishna. This is called imaginary enjoyment. In fact, everything is imaginary only. Even if you think somebody has brought from a wonderful sweetmeat shop your favorite sweet, how do you know? Supposing this fellow has bought it from somewhere and put it in a K.C. Das's container and sealed it cleverly and brought it to you. And because you are under the delusion, anything made by this particular sweetmeat shop will be of a quality sweet. And when you are eating, tell me, do you feel it is an inferior sweet or a superior sweet? Of course, if you are a very discerning person, it is possible to discriminate. But for most people, it is the imagination. A young man looks at a young woman, says she is the Miss Universe. And as far as he is concerned, she is Miss Universe. Others may judge her differently. The point I want to illustrate is, if we can develop that beautiful power of imagination, where we are enjoying things, then at any time, as long as we want, we can enjoy things imaginatively, and imaginary enjoyment, like dream happiness, will not be any less than what we call the waking state happiness. It will be even much better without any limitations. Therefore, the Upanishad continues, Atmanam eva lokam upasita. One should strive to manifest this potential divinity either through work or philosophy or by psychology or by selfless activity, by one or more or all of these put together, and be free. That's what Swami Vivekananda had said. And such a person's happiness will never come to an end. Nahi asya karma kshiyate. Nahi asya karma phala kshiyate. So, that is what he says, that try to realize God, you will get everything. What happens if a person cannot, or even not interested in spirituality, not interested in realizing God? That is what he says, atha yohava asmat lokat swam lokam adrishtva prati praiti sa yenam avidataha nabhunakti yatha yatha vedo van ananuktaha anyadva karma krutam. If a man departs from this world without realizing his own true self, and his own true self being unknown does not protect him, just like any knowledge, if it is not put into practical usage, will not give us the result. You may know everything in the world, but if you do not put it into particular action, then it will not help us at all. And again, the Upanishad tells, so whoever realizes this Atman, he will be, his ananda, his bliss will never come to an end, because it is infinite, it is one without a second, and most important, it is his own life. So, he who doesn't realize everything, he will have to come back again and again. Therefore, it is better that we wake up, uttishtata, jagrata, prapyavanan, nivodhata. That is the message of this 1/4, 10. Then, as I said, in this 11th to several these ones, we have discussed just now, all the Varnashrama Dharmas have only one purpose, that is to help us evolve towards our own true nature. So, from tamas to rajas to sattva, from student life, what I call, learn about what is life, what is the goal of life, then experiment and experience, then withdraw, because by this time we know, I will not get what I am seeking in this world, but I will get what I am seeking from God. Turn to God. Face away from the world. Turn towards God. And as we progress through contemplation, a time will come when we will be absorbed only in God. Become one with God in the end. That is the message of this 11th section and several other mantras also. Beautiful mantras. We will talk about them in our next class. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Muhur Muhuhu. May Ramakrishna Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with Bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.